you know, you're a financial advisor, or you run a, I don't know, plastic surgery group, and you have five people on your team, and you're doing $5 million of revenue, and you just need a bit of help. You don't need a full-time marketer, but maybe 1 month you'll need $2,000 worth of help, and another month you might need $5,000. Maybe you need July, you don't need anything. So offering that category of demographic this type of quality and flexibility seems to be a good fit for us.
This is a semi-live Automate and Grow episode with Nick Sonnenberg from Leverage. We met through the Influencer Salon, which is John Levy's. Normally it's a monthly live event, but with COVID, it's been like a weekly Zoom, which has been pretty good. So
yeah.
And then we were trying to figure out where we first met, and I'm assuming it's in New York. But Nick, first of all, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you have a podcast and a business by the same name, is that right?
Is it the Get right. Leverage? Well, it's getleverage.com is the URL, but that was just because leverage.com was taken by a big company. Amazing. So it's Leverage, the podcast, which you were just on, is the Leverage podcast. And yeah. Leverage is the brand.
So what is it that Leverage does, and what problem do you solve, and who do you help?
So we help entrepreneurs. Our sweet spot, really, people in the seven figures is the average or the most common. But we're helping people by giving them this agile on-demand team that they can use at their disposal to help them grow. And grow top line by doing marketing and sales work on demand, and bottom line by helping them become more operationally efficient, document and automate process. So rather than hiring full-time people or going on some of these freelancer platforms and it's a scavenger hunt to find a good person, we are just trying to make it as easy as possible to get the work done. We vet and train talent across all different skill sets. Another thing too, when you're looking to get something done, if you need a sales funnel set up or a book launch, it's not just one hire. You need probably 3 to 5 different types of people, right? You need, and there's a lot of different things that you want: a project manager, you want a designer, you need a writer, you need a strategy person, you need someone to post social media posting. So if you're looking on some of these platforms, you could just be spending all your time interviewing and looking, and how do you know if, you know, person A in this country is any better than this other person? And it's a race to the bottom price-wise. So we have flat rates. We're moving into products, so we're going to start productizing things. But we just make it really easy to get work done for those people. If you're way bigger than that, a lot of people are just hiring full-time in-house. And if you're way smaller, you know, it might not be a good fit, and you might want to look on some of those platforms. But if for people that, you know, value their time, you know, say above $100 an hour, sure, and just want things done right, you know, we might be an interesting solution for you.
Awesome. So, okay. So first, how did you come across this? Like what made you start Leverage?
That's a good question. I've always been I've been passionate about productivity and saving time basically my whole life. And before being an entrepreneur, I was a high frequency trader. I don't know if you knew that about me.
No, but I didn't.
So now you do. So I've always been obsessed about time and making the most of time. And then even as a high frequency trader, you know, in that type of business, you're trying to save microseconds, because microseconds could mean millions. So that's where I really got strong at automation, because it's all fully automated trading. And, you know, my background's in data science. So how do you leverage kind of math and data science and programming to automate trading? And we're looking at things like, how do we save a microsecond, or from a process, how do we save a second?
Okay.
So that's like the training. I did that for 8 years. So I look at everything from this lens, and I celebrate wins. If I could save one step in a 100-step process or 1 second, I'm constantly evaluating things like that, because if I look at the whole world through that lens, I'm going to find thousands of things, and that's going to add up to something meaningful. So fast forward a bit. I quit finance to pursue a scheduling tool app that I was building on the side called Calvin, which was making it more efficient for people to schedule with each other. So that was kind of the first stab at entrepreneurship, which was already in the productivity space. And I was getting some traction with that. And my ex-business partner and I were having dinner about 9 months after I quit. And it was the day a big virtual assistant company called Zirtual went under.
Oh, no.
Did you ever hear of Zirtual? They were a big virtual assistant company. And at that point, you know, automation and tools like Zapier is one tool in the tool chest, but virtual assistants is another tool in the tool chest, you know, in the tool chest of trying to save time and be more efficient. So I was very familiar with the whole space of virtual assistants, productivity, automation. And when they went under, we were having dinner and we were discussing, well, what would be, you know, there's pros and cons to all these platforms, but nothing kind of was fit for what I wanted. So you had the dedicated virtual assistant model, which has its limitations because you have a bottleneck with that one person. If they were to quit tomorrow, you're going to really be screwed. Not to mention they have limited capacity and skill set. Then on the other side, you have these other companies where you get a different person every time. So there's no personalization.
Right.
And the quality in the end, it's really for lower complexity types of things, like book me a flight, book me a dinner reservation. And so
How long ago was that? I was just trying to find Zirtual.
August of 2015. So being the engineer I am, I was like, all right, why don't we build our own, but we take this team approach and it's going to be highly vetted, highly skilled people. And I could build the, I said, look, if you can get 5 clients, I could build the platform tomorrow, an MVP. And on day 2, we can launch. So I did that. I hacked Trello as the backend with Zapier and a couple other things. So clients could start posting tasks in Trello. And that was the first version of it. So back to our conversation before of not over tooling or over building, like that was super helpful to build it off of Trello because we were learning so much about what the workflow needs to be to solve it. So that's how we started it. Now, fast forward, we're not a virtual assistant company anymore. Now we call ourselves more of a growth agency. And that's because what I found, it's hard. Everyone talks about return on investment, but there's also return on time. And that's something that I'm really concerned about is how do you give someone as high of a return on time as possible? Meaning I'll give you an example. I'm a writer for Inc. I might, in the back of an Uber, have an idea and record an audio recording of 3 minutes of an idea or a concept for an Inc. article. And then I'll send that to my ghostwriter. And then he'll spend 3 hours writing the article, coordinating with Inc., pass it over to the social media team, who will then blast it on social media. So basically 3 minutes of my time, what was kind of dead time anyways, because I'm in an Uber, gives me something that took 4 hours of people's time. So the ratio or the return on time is really high versus book a flight. By the time I explain to someone that I want to be on Delta aisle seat, and if this time doesn't work, do this. But if it's like $200 cheaper, than I don't care about the airline. Like by the time you have to explain all that, it's really hard to get a huge return on time. You might as well do it yourself in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
so I totally get what you're saying. That's the motivation. Like, so that's how we started the company, but that's the motivation for us pivoting and going more upscale.
So when you got started, you started in the virtual world, but you're obviously going for higher value activities. What sort of clients are you working with and, you know, what are they having you do for them?
So the avatar of client looks fairly similar, although it's shifting more towards the 8-figure entrepreneur, but it's always been entrepreneurs, business owners. Part of that is, you know, I'm a part of a handful of mastermind groups like Strategic Coach and Genius Network and others. So that's kind of the audience I'm already in front of. But I think also for the type of stuff that we're doing, that's the audience that this is the most impactful for. You know, a Fortune 100 company just will hire all the full-time talent that they need.
Totally.
A young startup
that's major tech, right?
Yeah. A young startup that can't really afford anything bootstrap, like they're going to have to just roll up their sleeves and work 100 hours and wear 12 hats and, you know, go on Upwork and find someone. But what about that market where, you know, you're a financial advisor or you run a, I don't know, plastic surgery group, and you have five people on your team and you're doing 5 million of revenue and you just need a bit of help. You don't need a full-time marketer, but maybe 1 month you'll need $2,000 worth of help, and another month you might need 5,000. Maybe you need July, you don't need anything. So offering that category of demographic, this type of quality and flexibility seems to be a good fit for us. What does your demographic look like? Like, what are the kinds of clients that you're going after?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I definitely get some, you know, the kind of those 7-8 figure. I don't really necessarily categorize them that way, but that's probably what they are. Those founder-led businesses where they've just grunted their way through and used their sheer entrepreneurial will to build something. Sometimes they have technology, sometimes they don't. And it's really always a bit of a mess. So I'm able to come in and act like almost like a fractional type CTO. So that's where the advisory part comes in, which is like, let me, you know, understand what you're doing, tell you where you should stop doing things and start doing things, and let's fix it. So then that's where I usually fit. I'm usually focused on sometimes digital products if it touches marketing sales. In other words, like there's marketing and sales systems, but usually I'm only getting involved in digital product development if it's part of that. So whether it's Salesforce backend or some marketing automation backend.
And is your funnel, or do you find people first start with the advisory where you come up with the architecture and then you have a team of people to execute on the strategy that you built, but they're first starting?
I think they're looking for a developer 99% of the time. They think that that's what they need.
Yeah.
So they think that what they need is the technical person that they are not. And what they realize is one of two things. They either in the past have gone that road, and I think you highlighted this in a previous conversation, and they've blown 100, 200 grand on something that should have been 25 or 50 because they don't have a strategy and direction on what they should be building and not building. Most things you shouldn't build, you should buy and customize or not 100%. Even have it, right? Yeah. And I think that people get sucked into this. There's an element of the development world, as you know, where they will come in cheap and then it goes on and on and on because they're taking direction from you and you don't know what you're doing. Like you don't have a understanding necessarily of here's how software is built or here's how automation happens.
And when you hire the cheaper resource, in the end, 9 times out of 10, you end up spending overall way more money, I find.
Way more.
And totally. Like, and I suffered when I hired a developer in my previous company where it's like, okay, well, you know, 115 hours seems really high. I'll go with the 30 or the 40. And like, that should be enough for like the first version. But then what ends up happening, the reason why someone's cheaper is they're not going to think it through, ask the right questions and build it in an abstract way so that if the requirement changes a little bit, hey, we don't want to build them monthly. We want to build them weekly.
Right.
Like that should just be like a variable that you need to change, take someone 2 seconds. But if you just like hire the cheaper person that's not going to think about how do you abstract this so that this could easily change, maybe we should like spend an extra 10% of time now to build it in a little bit more general way so that it's more extendable down the road. Like that, sometimes those things that in your mind should be a small change or fix ends up being a $10,000 change because you just didn't architect the whole backend properly to begin with.
So I think that you probably, or maybe it's more of a question, do you find that your sweet spot is really eliminating the uncertainty and defining what the thing looks like first? Is that the benefit of dealing with leverage that I'm not having to find, train, and then tell someone what to do? It's like,
we just make it really easy to get stuff done, basically, right? So we are doing a few things for people. So there's two things, right? There's like the core of leverage, which is the on-demand freelancers that we vet, train. If someone's not happy, they're not trying to argue with some person overseas. Like they're dealing, like they'll talk to me. Like we'll handle it. So they have the kind of stamp of approval of being behind a business, and all the breadth of different services that we offer too. And then also it's just simple pricing. Like there's some hourly rates, but it's not that you hire Johnny, it's $87 an hour, but Mary Beth is 69 and someone else is 236. So we just make it really easy. But then what we've started doing now too, which we're building out and I'm leading, is the operational efficiency stuff, where we're offering some roadmaps and we'll sit down and kind of build a roadmap. What do you need to do from an operation standpoint to build that foundation? And then what we'll do is we'll do the strategy piece, and then I'll hand it over to the team, and then they'll do the setup and execution. And we're doing that both on a marketing side of things and on an operation side of things.
So I think what you're hitting on is, I'll use the example of Apple, where there is magic and complexity behind the product, but the elegance of it is it's simple and I know what I'm getting. It looks prettier.
Totally. And not to mention,
I love what you're doing. That's great.
Well, and also not to mention, there's so much shared learning, right? So a team member could pick up a task that the client wants to automate something in Airtable and connect it to the CRM, right? And maybe the team member gets stuck. Well, they have a whole support system where they can post. And as a team behind the scenes, like, we can help to unstuck them, and then they go back to the client, versus you go and hire a freelancer on one of these platforms. They don't have a support network, or maybe they have a small one, but they're not getting that level of support where they can go and have 10 people think through how to solve a problem.
Totally, that makes
to unstuck
sense.
Them on a client. So that's another really big benefit. And we've done, you know, tens of thousands of projects and tasks for clients. So we're constantly updating playbooks of the best practice. And a lot of the best practices we find, because the client asks us to do something that was smart, and we're like, oh, that's a pretty clever way of doing a podcast. Like, yeah, we'll do that for you. And then we go and update the playbooks, and now, you know, others can benefit from those learnings. So it's on both ends. We're learning from our clients that we're helping, as well as we learn from each other.
So it's interesting. So you're using like a playbook methodology to expand and share knowledge between kind of remote teams.
Yeah, and we're constantly evolving that, and it needs to be better. But yeah, we have a knowledge base that we're constantly updating that people can refer to execute tasks better and more, not just efficiently, but more effectively.
And how do most people find you?
My podcast, my book, speaking at conferences, or the circles of Strategic Coach and Genius Network are kind of the main circles.
That makes sense.
Entrepreneurial mastermind groups, EO, YPO, things like that.
Oh, great.
Okay. How do people find out about you guys?
It's probably a mix. You know, some of it people will find because I would say referral is part of it. Content is another, which, you know, I have a podcast and a book, and it's on the theme of automate and grow, obviously. I always struggle with the idea of, do I need to be proactive and go after people that look like my client? And in this day and age, I'm not sure about the answer still. Because, you know, you obviously want to grow and scale, and you've got your own systems in place that you can do that. Some people do find us through freelance platforms, but those are not necessarily ideal. Although there are a lot of legitimate businesses on there that struggle because they're looking for what they think is a developer or a designer. And what they really need is they need advice first.
Totally. Well, we actually shut off marketing and sales for the most part. And our focus right now is not growing the client base. It's increasing lifetime value and retention of the client base.
Smart. Okay.
I learned the hard way, actually. Premature scaling can almost... The word scaling sounds great and sexy to everyone, yeah. But it's not, there's an optimal pace to scale. And I learned the hard way that we scaled too quickly. And actually that was a big problem for us. And it's taken a couple of years to unwind a lot of the problems that caused and actually build a strong foundation. We were just talking about how a CRM is a foundational layer, but the way I look at things is every business has attraction, conversion, retention,
right,
for the most part. And a lot of people start from left to right, and they're thinking a lot at least in the circles that I'm in, they're thinking about marketing strategies. And then after they've exhausted that conversation, then they start thinking about sales strategies. And actually, I really don't ever hear people talking much about retention. But what I found was it's better to go from right to left and really focus first on getting your retention where it should be, because that proves that you actually have a business model that's going to be sustainable and that you have a quality product that people want. And after you get the retention up, then how are you converting the current base of people that you have? A lot of people are spending money on marketing and ads, and we were investing a lot of time and resources on that. And we already had like a list of thousands or tens of thousands of people that we weren't being smart about converting. And it's like, what if we do no marketing? We would just try to maximize the value of that list. It's kind of like the Jay Abraham book, Getting All You Can Out of All You Got.
Right. Yeah, so, great book, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I was just talking to, I'm writing a follow-up book with Jay.
No way. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
So, so that's what I learned was there's kind of an order of operations, and, it's kind of like, imagine you have a sink that's overflowing with water and you're just trying to mop the floor faster versus trying to find the broken part of the pipe and try to patch the pipe. And when you have bad retention and not really any sales conversion, you're just relying on brute force, doing a ton of marketing. You're doing it the hard way, not the smart way, and it's not going to be very scalable. So we totally paused everything and now... just focused on maximizing lifetime value and not just retention, but like looking at retention in two dimensions, three dimensions. Like I'm building out retention surfaces and retention curves so we can see at every touch point, how's our retention evolving?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think like maybe naturally I'm not necessarily a marketer. And to me, it's always like a thing that I struggle with.
Same.
You know, like, you know, if I go really back, it's like my DNA is probably sales and then partnerships and obviously starting stuff and making stuff work. I don't know if those two bookends are my strength, which is like the post-sales support and the, you know, getting people that don't know me to know me. So I've tried to like fill in that by doing interesting stuff like the podcast or the book and then just obviously communicating with people. But you always have in the back of your mind that you're supposed to do this other stuff that's like more targeted, strategic, and
yeah.
I don't know if I've ever really mastered that.
I don't know. I mean, I think that a lot of people that I see, a lot of it is ego-driven, not necessarily what's the smartest, highest, and best place to invest resources in the business. But we kind of do the minimum amount. Like I do the podcast and a few things here and there. I'm a writer for Inc. But beyond that, really, we have no paid ads that we're doing. We have a newsletter, but it's really just to, you know, have a minimum presence. Sure. But really, all the focus is
quality.
Is how do we increase the quality of our service? You know, how do we grow by referrals? How do we grow by expanding the current book of business? Like, I really think that I don't need another client. I could just at least 10, if not 100x the revenue with what we have right now, if we were just smarter about engaging them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that churn and retention, SaaS has probably brought a big highlight to the reality of that model, which is, you know, they're banking on recurring revenue. And the thing that kills those recurring revenue models is churn. You know, people don't stick because either they don't use the tool or, you know, it doesn't work properly.
Well, leverage is a recurring revenue model. Like, we have a monthly retainer that people have to subscribe to. So it is a subscription with us.
Yeah. And I was going to say, like, you're in that space now, because I think it's now graduated beyond software as a service. That model plays into service as a service is how, I don't know if that's the
best. Maybe it's people as a service. I don't know.
Yeah, or expertise as a service. I wonder what we can go on here. But
so that, well, I've heard of sense, there's right? Marketing as a service. I've heard of that. Math. Maybe I'll call it GAS, growth as a service.
Growth as a service. Yeah, what would you get with that? Just customers?
what do you get with GAS?
Yeah.
It's a smelly room.
To play with that. Yeah. I was thinking like a car, but... Well, Nick, I know we could talk forever, so I want to be conscious of your time.
Yeah. We'll do this. We'll do like a monthly one.
We should totally do that. I think that's a great idea. I'm trying to make a more conscious effort. So I had John Lee Dumas on the podcast, and I asked him the question of, if you had to start over, what would you do today in the podcast? Because that's the core of his business. And he just answered niche. So I'm really trying to make a conscious effort to talk more about software, services, and tactics. Since it is Automate and Grow, I tend to talk to a lot of really interesting people, which I think is important, but I'm also trying to hive off this other thing. So maybe we can collaborate on that. That would be great if we can talk
about, I would love to,
specific tools and tactics about problems that people might have in their business.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. So a couple things. First off, if you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with, who do you, Nick, spend the most time with?
My girlfriend, I spend a lot. Is this pre-coronavirus that we're talking right now? Because right now I'm not spending too much time with people.
Yeah, you're in New York, so.
Yeah.
I spent restaurants already, so.
I spent a lot of time with my girlfriend. I guess in what context? Because my team, like, I spend a ton of time with my core executive team at Leverage. I mean, we're constantly, every day I'm spending hours with those people.
Yep. Makes sense.
So I spend a lot of time with them. I have a business partner in a mastermind group that we launched called Bullseye. So I spend a lot of time with Lee Brower from Bullseye.
Oh, cool.
He's awesome. He was in the movie The Secret. He's this like old school leadership guy. So I spend time with Lee, my girlfriend, my team, and my close friends, Mike, Dove, Aaron. We talk pretty much every day.
I love it. Great answer. How are you, Nick, changing the world?
Well, I'm trying to make the world more efficient. So for me, I'm really passionate about the future of work and how do you create the most robust, efficient company where it's frictionless and you have reduced waste. And the service that we provide at Leverage is just one tool tool chest of things to help make a company be more efficient. Mm-hmm. But I'm equally, if not more, passionate about the way that companies operate as well. So a lot of the things that I talk about, and this is why we've added it as a core offering, is the operational efficiency. But how do you leverage systems and tools? Like, my new book coming out is called Come Up for Air, How Your Team Can Leverage Systems and Tools to Stop Drowning in Work. Come Up for Air. It's not out yet. I have to finish it, but
I have one of those right now.
Yeah.
Did you start it during COVID?
No, I started it I started it like a year and a half ago, two years ago, but I put it on pause for the last year. So busy with work, and it's the book is about my foundation. I have a framework called CPR. It stands for Communicate, Plan, Resource. And that's in my experience with building Leverage as well as consulting with various companies. Every company, regardless of industry, size, location, at a foundational level needs those three components. And then what I found was, one, I was just way too busy with Leverage, but two, even the way that we were operating Leverage had greatly changed. And so I just was like, let's put the pause on it, because we will always evolve, but there was so much already different from what I had written. And now I know so much better best practice. So I'm going to have to put a stake in the ground, just be like, look, as of this date, this is how we operate. But there was just so many moving parts that I put a pause on it so I could come back to it.
You get the team to get some control.
Oh, trust me, they're writing it. I mean,
that's funny.
I mean, my first book, I spent only 25 hours on this book.
What's the name of the book, by the way?
Idea to Execution.
I wanted people to see it. So.
Yeah. So.
And you can get that on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. I only spent 25 hours on the book. Basically, every day I'd go for a walk. I would audio record some ideas for the book. That would automatically go to a Dropbox folder, send a Slack message to a writer who would listen to it, summarize it, put it in Evernote. And after 9 months, we took that Evernote, I used Tucker Max's company in collaboration with us, his company Scribe Media. We gave them the Evernote. They interviewed me for a sequence of interviews, gave me a rough draft, put it in a Google Doc, suggestion mode, announced on the podcast who wants to be a first reader. And I got 12 people raise their hand. So I crowdsourced the editing. Love and then it. I gave it a read. So like 25 hours to have a book, basically.
Okay. So I've been writing Form Your Own Pack. I think I don't know if I mentioned that to you, which is really modernizing the Japanese Keiretsu conglomerate model. So the idea being that, you know, we've got digital tech, but there's, you know, lots of examples in business and in nature of how we're just going to get a lot more leverage, to your point, out of a cooperative ventures. So the idea is that trying to create a model where you can find allies and alliances and then formalize the alliances so that you have cross shareholdings. There's affiliate revenue, and then there's automatically sharing of data, relationships, technology, and talent. So it's kind of like a, you know, it's like saying, listen, the big guys are doing this. The Keiretsu came out of World War II and saved Japan in a lot of ways, the reindustrialization of Japan. But how do we reimagine this in the context of digital and what we're doing?
Love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We got to finish that too. we can like be accountability buddies on that.
Yeah. We could just like hop on like a Saturday Zoom and be like, all right, now let's not talk to each other. That's just right.
Clean it up. Yeah. Okay. How do people get in touch with you, Nick?
My website's getleverage.com. Podcast is Leverage Podcast. My email is nick@getleverage. So it's pretty easy to find me.
Love it. Okay. So the final thing is, when we have people on the podcast who are interesting, we like you to nominate other interesting guests. We usually talk to experts or entrepreneurs. Sometimes it's authors. Sometimes it's people that are you know, doing interesting things in computers, networks, 3D printing, AI.
I like it. That's a really interesting concept.
You mentioned right. Tucker Max. Do you know Tucker?
I know Tucker. He's an interesting guy. I could put you in touch with Tucker. He's not just an interesting guy, like if you've read his book or seen the movie, but he's a really smart entrepreneur.
Right.
So Tucker would be a good one. Keith Ferrazzi, who wrote the book Never Eat Alone.
Yep.
He's a dear friend, and he'd probably be a really interesting guest too. My buddy Ben Hardy just wrote a book that launched this week called Personality Isn't Permanent.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Is this a postmodernist book where it's going to reprogram my brain? Or
it's just discussing like how personality tests like Myers-Briggs and others are flawed, and actually how your personality can change.
I like it. Cool.
Yeah. So I would start with it. Just let me know, and I could put you in touch with one or all of them.
So funny enough, I think Keith and I are first degree connections, but we haven't spent very much time connecting on LinkedIn. And then I saw him on the Peter Diamandis Abundance 360. He did a live with him.
Yeah.
So I keep seeing Keith. So definitely Keith, we will try to connect with him. I'm totally interested in talking to Tucker and Ben. So I'm going to take three nominations. I'm going to totally get leverage out of this one.
That's Nick, a lot of leverage so right there.
It's a lot of leverage. So those are all great nominations. We'll figure out which one makes the most sense. Nick, thank you so much for joining me on this.
And this was fun. Thanks.
Future stuff with you. We collaborate on more tools, tactics, and software.
Love it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.